The Augustin Hosinga Show with your host Augustin Hosinga.
Smack the shit out your bitch ass midget girlfriend, nigga.
Hello there and welcome back to the Augustin Hosinga Show with I, your host, Augustin Hosinga, and this is episode number 769. I think it should be 769. If it's not 769, then it should be something close to 769, but I'm hoping to God that it is 769. It should be 769. So thank you so much for tuning in, every single one of you. I appreciate all of you who tune in from far and wide, from near and close. Big up everybody. Appreciate you. Appreciate you. Appreciate you. It's a lovely day, actually. A lovely day. United managed to win the semi-finals against Coventry, even though the performance was terrible. We're through to a final against Man City, so that should be fun. But it's on top of that being a lovely day, it was actually one of the nicest days in my content creation times that I've been doing stuff online. It has actually been one of my favorite days, I'm not going to lie, because I received a very, 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 very unexpected and generous gift from one of my lovely, lovely viewers and listeners of the show, or mostly of the random show, which is Austin Casey. So I want to give Austin Casey a big flipping shout out for basically providing me with a setup, a podcast and streaming setup. I had shared on my channel, I think a few weeks ago, an Amazon gift list that somebody suggested I put on there. I was pretty hesitant about it at first, I'm not going to lie. It's just a bit awkward, It's just a bit awkward, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? But I put my pride to one side for once, because I had a pretty crazy week where my computer just wasn't working and things were just going over the, just going crazy. And it wasn't good on the viewer. Do you know what I mean? It's fine for me because I don't really give a fuck. As you guys can tell, I'm a little bit DIY, brockety brack, bricky brack, rough around the edges anyway. But I think for the viewer, you guys aren't here on my side of things. You're not seeing what's going on, how I'm fixing it. So all you see is a stream. So when it keeps going down and stuff, or the sound is shit, or the video is laggy, it's super annoying. And I can understand if you're watching me, it can be kind of frustrating when, like, you got your fucking tea, you're just about to get your drinks ready, right? You're about to put your kids down. You've taken you're about to go on a walk with your dog. And then here I am fucking about, sounding like I'm in a fucking underwater fucking, tank or somewhere, or sounding like I've got a fucking OVO 40 effect on my voice. So I understand how fucked up that shit can be and how annoying it is. But obviously I wasn't in the position to like get my stuff sorted out yet. So to have somebody come in and kind of gift me with this stuff, which includes a monitor, a streaming laptop, basically a keyboard, some headphones, which I'm using currently now, to get basically going, is a real, real blessing. And I don't really take that for granted. I don't expect these things at all. To be honest, I'm fortunate I have anybody listening to me, because I don't really understand why anybody would listen to me. Yes, on one side of things, I'm very, weird in that respect, where I legitimately think I have something interesting to say, really, but I don't expect anyone to listen to me, if that makes any sense. Like, I think that's like partial main character syndrome. That's like partial narcissism. Like, I think a lot of myself, but I also don't expect anybody else to think a lot of me. You know what I mean? It's like my own, it's like supreme self-confidence without expecting an audience. It's really bizarre. It's really odd. I know it. But if you see the way I do content, if you see the way I talk about stuff, you can tell that I'm not really in this to kind of like win hearts and minds. I just kind of do what I do and people like it and I'm really happy about it. But I'm not in the game of, like, being a dancing monkey and saying things that people want to hear from me. But when people do kind of, you know, illustrate their like of the show by gifting me with such stuff, even though it's not necessary, it's not needed, just you guys watching, liking my stream, subscribing, whatever it may be, commenting on my videos is more than enough. If when people go above and beyond like this, you have to recognize it, because this is not like an everyday thing. So big up Austin Casey for this. I really do appreciate it. I honestly do. Yeah, man. You know what I mean? It's just mad. It's just mad. If you guys have been here from the beginning, you would have known, man. Like, you know, this stuff was rough, bro. This was rough. You know what I mean? I was starting really raggy on the the stuff that I was doing was really rough around the edges, but I was bored during COVID, like I think the rest of you were, which is probably how a lot of people probably found my channel. Everyone was bored during COVID. You saw my big fat fucking black head, you know, talking shit about these comedians that you all know and love, or some of you hate, and you all kind of resonated with it, and I really do appreciate it. So this goes out to everybody, obviously it's also Austin KSD as well, for gifting the stuff that I got today, and obviously to everybody else who kind of just watches the show and listens. I appreciate all of you so much, and I'll try my best to do right by this kind of, you know, love and kind of affection and stuff and appreciation, and just try and put on as many consistent good streams now going forward, so that I can repay some of this good faith that you guys have in me. So I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for the support and stuff, and yeah, man, I'm just going to be banging out the fucking streams now going forward, pure banging out the stream. So I don't want to hear anybody saying they're getting frustrated or getting, oh yo, I'm tired of you, you're always here. Look, don't fucking click my videos and like and fucking view my shit if you don't want me here. Do you know what I mean? Vote with your feet. Vote with your views. If you keep fucking giving me views, I'm going to keep being here giving you my fucking, I'm going to give you my opinions and my views by force. Do you know what I mean? You're not even going to want that. I'm going to give it by force, bro. I'm going to fucking Chris D'Elia and Brian Callen you with my opinions. If you know, you know. But on the subject of this, right? I don't know what you guys think in a stream chat, or just in general, those of you who are going to be probably listening to this after the fact, let me know. This kind of makes me think about my friend Bobby, and he will know. My friend Bobby would know what I'm talking about, right? He's always been the kind of person that says he would much rather buy something. He would much rather buy the best, like if he wants to get into photography, if my friend Bobby wanted to get into photography, he would much rather go and buy the best SLR, the best camera he can get a hold of, with the best lens, with the best bag strap, with the best bag, with the best dust cover, with the best everything to get started. Whereas I'm the type of person, if I want to get in photography, I'll buy the mid or entry level thing just to get going, because I don't like to feel like I can't get going with the stuff because I don't have the money to buy the expensive thing. Then once I start getting into it and I like it, I might then buy the expensive thing. But the issue with my option is that I end up, the stuff I buy that's entry level, it ends up breaking. Do you know what I mean? It ends up breaking. So you have to end up replacing it. So you end up spending more money buying the entry to mid-level thing than buying the actual high-end thing. So I'm not too sure what the right way is to go about doing things. Should you just save up and buy the high-end thing just so you can, you know, future-proof yourself? Or should you buy whatever you can buy so you're not limited by the equipment and then go from there? Because I think my approach wasn't bad. I just feel like my equipment hit a wall after a while. It's just, there's only so much you can push a 2017, 2015 MacBook Pro. I did as much as I could do with that equipment. Do you know what I mean? I bought as much as I could. I pushed that fucking laptop that I have to the fucking brink, literally to the brink. So it's probably not a surprise that it broke. And also, I'm demanding a lot more out of a MacBook. Most people aren't streaming OBS on a MacBook. Do you know what I mean? Most people aren't fucking editing on a MacBook and streaming on a Mac, like not the one that I have, and not 2015 one. Do you know what I mean? So maybe there is a view that you maybe should go in early, and I don't know. People are saying here you should future. David Guerrero said with laptops it's best to future proof. Yeah, true. True. But if you're still poor, if you're still pushing it in 2023, then it's damn cheap. Yeah, cool. I did that twice. Electronic scooter, bought a 400. Yeah, big up Abe Martinez. I did it twice with an electric scooter. I bought a $400 scooter, broke twice. Should have just bought the scooter for $1,200. My friend Bobby would have done that. My friend Bobby would have bought the $5,000 option, whatever the highest one is, just to kind of be there. Whereas I would have bought the fucking China one. You know what I mean? So, Anyway, I think I've learned my lesson now. I think going forward, especially with my equipment, especially when it comes to streaming stuff, content, because it's not really about me, it's kind of about the viewer, you know. I'm not really giving the viewer respect or respecting their time or their attention if I can't just put out good videos or, like, you know, good streams. It becomes a bit annoying, and sometimes I'm sure I've lost people along the way. I'm sure, because they kept, you know, imagine I was unlucky and somebody come to check out my stream and they checked it out on the week where my computer was fucking up. Do you know what I mean? Then suddenly they're like, fuck that, I'm not going to come back again. So I kind of owe people that level of respect. If you're going to give me your time, the least I can do is make sure that my stream isn't lagging. You know what I mean? You're not asking for much. I think that's a fair deal. Just make sure your stream isn't lagging. But yeah, I don't know, man. Big up Austin Casey. Big up everybody that tunes into the show. I appreciate all of you so much, man. Honestly, you really don't know. Like, you really, really don't know. Like, I'm not, yeah, I mean, I'm just some regular dude from London, bro. I'm some regular dude from ENDS. I don't expect anything, really. And the fact that, you know, I get gifted something like that to kind of get my content going up to the next level is something that I will never, ever, ever forget. I swear to God, I really won't ever forget. And, you know, like I said in the caption, if I had a bit more of a heart, if I had emotions, I would literally cry, but I can't because I'm too much of a thug. And actually, thinking about that, I swear my life, right? This is really concerning, and another indication of where I should go to therapy quite soon. I don't remember the last time I've cried. I can't remember the last time I've cried. I think the only time I cry, or I would cry, is when I get booked at Berghain or something. Like, when the Berghain email comes through, because it will eventually come through at one point. When I eventually get booked to play at Berghain or something, I think I might sob. Like, that might be the time I sob on my desk. I sob wherever I read the email. I sob in the DJ booth. But I can't remember the last time I cried. And it's really sad because I've had friends pass recently. I've had family members pass away. You know, and I haven't cried. It's pretty wild, isn't it? I don't cry at all. I almost sometimes find it as a weakness, which it ain't, because it's an emotion. It's a form of expression. But it's super wild how I don't remember the last time I've cried. I can't remember it. Like, even if I try, my memory isn't the greatest anyway, but even if I try to remember, I can't, which is worrying, it's, you know, for what it is. But hey, what can you do? We are who we are. We are who we are. Moving on. It was a great day for boxing, a great day for boxing, a great day for mental health, a great day for drug addiction, a great day for anti-lifestyle shamers. And why do I say that? Ryan Garcia versus fucking Devin Haney. Big up fucking Ryan Garcia for pulling off the unexpected, for pulling off something that nobody thought would flipping happen. He absolutely battered Haney. Battered him in a way that we were all not expecting because of the fucking lead up to the fight. Garcia's having a mental breakdown, breakthrough. He's talking about PDFs. He's talking about cults. He's talking about Jesus, Kanye, all these wild things. Epstein, this and that. He's clearly going through something. He's drinking. He might be on the powder. And he still gets the job done. You know why that's amazing? You know why that's amazing? Because I am fed up. I hate to my core lifestyle shamers. And I detest people who don't realize that outliers sometimes exist. Yo, big up Uche. What's good? What's good, Uche? Bang your flipping chest. What's good, Uche? Outliers exist. And Ryan Garcia is such an outlier. That uncle that you know who holds down a job or is the CEO of a company or who owns his own flipping garage, but he drinks and smokes every day, he is an outlier. You don't lifestyle shame these people. You look from afar with awe and you just keep on going. But people nowadays have this prerequisites a lifestyle shame. Oh, he's doing too many drugs. He's drinking too much. Bruh, some people can just handle it. Are you forgetting that Ryan Garcia is fucking Mexican? Those guys are built different. Those are the dudes who can build a whole fucking shopping mall in a calendar week, Monday to Sunday, they can build a whole shopping mall from the foundation to the fucking roof, from the elevators to the escalators in 1 week's flat. These people are not the same as you and I. He can get away with that. He's of different stock. Different fucking gravy, as they say in the UK. Ryan Garcia is different gravy. So yeah, can he do a fucking a couple of eight balls before a fight and drink a Modelo and beat one of the best fighters in the fucking world with the fucking hydration clause? Of course he can. Can you do it? No. Should you be complaining and pointing fingers at him? No. Because he's built different. Built different. What is it? Viva la raza. Or whatever those guys say. Viva la raza, la raza. Whatever they fucking say. Whatever that slogan is. It almost gives them superpowers, bro. Mexican people are different, family. And he's not fucking, you know, Taco Bell Mexican like Brendan Schaub says. He keeps real Mexicans around him. He's of different stock, brother. What do you think was going to happen? Same with Conor McGregor. He could probably do a couple of eight balls before he does an MMA fight and still win. Because he's flipping Irish, bro. That guy, Conor McGregor, is basically the Irish equivalent of trailer trash. That's a different type of white person. Irish people. The amount of wars. The amount of persecution. The amount of civil wars they've gone through throughout their generations. What do you expect? And you're comparing him to somebody else. Oh, he should be training. He doesn't need to. He's fucking Mexican. Don't forget that. Different fucking gravy. So big up Ryan Garcia for taking away this adage that I fucking hate lifestyle shamers, by the way. If you want to be a square and you want to live a square life, live your square life. No one is judging you, right? No one is judging you, right? You think fucking avocado and toast is exotic? Huh? You love drinking matcha teas? Huh? You wear your Crocs to the fucking beach? Huh? There's nothing bad about being a normie. Nothing bad about being a regular person. But if you're a regular person and you witness an absolute freak of a specimen like Ryan Garcia be able to party the entire time he's in camp and beat, knocked down four times, you know, officially recognized only as free time, but he knocked down four times one of the best fighters in his fucking division. Don't fucking lifestyle shame. Just look from afar and clap. That's all you have to do. Don't lifestyle shame, because some people don't need to do what you do. Some people don't need to fucking be all right and the best person and all sweet. No, some people are just built different. Ryan Garcia, built different. He probably had an eight ball in his fucking sock while he was fighting. He probably had an eight ball in his fucking sock while he was fighting. What do you expect? By the way, it's a bad day for fucking fear of God, innit? What a bad day for fear of God. It couldn't happen to a worse person, by the way. Jerry Lorenzo using fucking Christianity as a prop for his shitty brand that does sweats. You know, high-level luxury sweatpants. And he had fucking Devin Haney wearing essential, you know, fucking boxing shorts with these horrendous shoe surgeon, fear of God makeup, whatever shoes they are. Imagine you're fighting a fucking fight against one of the best fighters in the world and you've got fucking turtleneck shoes on. You've got cable knit, turtleneck knitwear shoes on. It couldn't happen to a worse brand. Fuck fear of God. Worst day ever for fear of God. Worst advert ever for fear of God to introduce fear of God athletics or whatever this fuck this shit was. He's got his fucking feet in there. Look at that. Look at how crappy those shoes look. Look at that. Look at this fucking picture. Look at this black man doing what black man should be doing. Protecting another black man from getting his ass kicked. I love that. But you should have given him four knockdowns. You should have stopped the fight after the third black man. Ryan Garcia. You should have stopped it after the third knockdown. It's fucking Ryan Garcia, you fucking cunts. Huh? Look at that again. Bad day for fear of God. A good day for fucking Nike. This is another example why the experts don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And why speciality is the most important thing ever. Don't try and mix streetwear into fucking sports. We want to see the best sports. The best of sportswear. Not fucking streetwear. Don't mix it in there. This is pure athlete. This is somebody taking the fight seriously and somebody thinking it's fucking complex con. Fuck off. Night night, Haney. Night night. And supposedly, he fucking broke his jaw also. That's it. Supposedly, his jaw is also broken. That's it. All of that, all of the shoes, the graphics, the construction, all for nothing. The fucking heavy knit fucking essential shorts, which make no sense, by the way, right? Jay Lorenzo has Fear of God. Jay Lorenzo has Essentials, which is actually the, you know, the, what you call it? The subsidiary of Fear of God. It's almost a kind of like, you know, it's the core brand. It's kind of like for the kids. It's a streetwear, the you know, the sweats that everyone wears. But he's also got a brand called Fear of God Athletics. But this isn't Fear of God Athletics. This is Fear of God Essentials. So now he's trying to get what? Kids to wear Fear of God Essentials, which is incredibly overpriced, in the gym. You want people to wear $200 sweatshirts in the gym? Are you having a fucking laugh? So why does this exist? Why does Fear of God Athletics exist, which is a collaboration with Fear of God and Adidas, but then you have the guy wearing Fear of God Essentials? Can someone make sense of that, please? Nobody knows because it's fucking shit. But Jay Lorenzo in the fucking mud. Devin Haney in the fucking mud. We love to fucking see it. What's Jay Lorenzo talking about? How's he taking this? How's Jay Lorenzo taking this loss? Oh, he's got some fake pictures of some model running up and down stairs. This model doesn't work out. He just doesn't eat. That's not the same thing. Let's continue. Has he got anything about Devin Haney? What's he got about Devin Haney there? 10 hours ago. What's he got? Some motivational quote about Jesus. Life is about how many times you get up. Fuck off. Overpriced sweatshirt brand that's supposedly doused in anointing oil got fucking buried by somebody that fucking probably had more than a few bumps a night before. You love to fucking see it. You love to fucking see it. Big up Ryan Garcia. Long live Mexicans. Long live fucking Mexico. I fucking love the place. I love the fucking people. You're fucking freaks. And I love how freaky you are and how different you are from the rest of the world. And you shouldn't be pointing and thinking, oh my God, they should chill out. Shut up and clap from afar. Admire fucking greatness when you see it. Because I don't know about you, but I can't even work my regular 9-to-5 when I don't get more than 7 hours sleep. This guy's fighting another man who could literally kill him in the ring. And he's partying the night before. This guy's different. He's not like us. He's not like you and I. He's fucking different. He's fucking Mexican. I swear, man, I was so happy when I saw that. Big up Ryan Garcia. I was so happy when I saw that. I was so fucking happy. Moving on from that. Lil Uzi Vert, I like you. Lil Uzi Vert, I like you. I really do like Lil Uzi Vert. I find him incredible. I find him fascinating as a character, as an artist, and all that malarkey. But this has gone too far. This is now his example. I wouldn't say it's queer baiting, but it's definitely like weirdo baiting, alternative baiting. So Lil Uzi Vert was performing at Coachella Weekend 1 and he came out in a very interesting outfit, which I don't have an issue with the outfit. It just doesn't look good. The top might be Rick Owens. I'm not sure what the top is. The pants are somewhere else. The shoes are whatever. But he was just acting unnecessarily sassy just to get attention, I feel like. He's always been a bit of a weirdo anyway. He's always been a bit on the, you know, on the edges, pushing the fucking envelope, which I'm all for. I don't give a fuck about. Some of the stuff that I do and I wear and I get up to in my private time is pretty wild. So don't get me wrong. But I feel like this is very performative. I don't feel like this is actually him. I feel like he's doing this on purpose to distract from the lack of quality in his music nowadays and from how shit that show was. Lil Uzi Vert was terrible at Coachella, screaming over his own records, MP3s, singing with, because I'm a big stickler and I think you should be also, and most music fans are, but when you go and watch someone live, you want to hear them rap, you want to hear them sing, But some of these rappers are lazy. What they'll do is that they'll play their regular song that you already have from Apple Music, from Spotify. They'll play that in the background and they'll lower the mids or lower the highs so that they can just scream over it. So they'll basically act like their own hype man at a show. I don't think that's acceptable, because bands and other artists and even old school hip hop artists will get up on stage and they will breathe into a mic and rap every single lyric. Now, some people, Ice Spice being a good example, is actually doing that now. She used to do what Lil Uzi Vert did in the past, but Ice Spice at this Coachella smashed it. She came on stage and she was rapping all the bars. Like, wow, somebody finally in Ice Spice's team told her, hey, forget the backing track, no vocal backing tracks, just sing with the instrumental. And if you need help, because sometimes, you know, I'm assuming it's hard to sing on stage, especially live, because you're, you know, running around, you're going to get a breath, you're going to get tired. So sometimes what artists will do is that they'll have the vocals on the chorus. So they'll rap the verses, but have the vocals on a chorus. I think that's not acceptable, but still, it's a good middle ground. Lil Uzi Vert didn't do any of that. He just screamed on top of, over the fucking thing. And because he had the fucking headset mic, you could hear every breath over the fucking tune I was playing. It was fucking awful. So I think this whole outfit debacle thing is just a distraction from the actual lack of the show. The show isn't good. And this is just pure bait, attention seeking. He's got this, you know, he's got a mini Birkin that's a collaboration with Chrome Hearts that might be a Rick Owens top. He's got, like, it's just all attention seeking, that all red stuff. He's got his, like, whatever. It's all attention seeking to distract away from the lack of quality of the music and the live of the show. And I hate that for him, because he's one of the best in his generation of his peer group. And he's limiting it all by just doing all this nonsense. I don't love it. I really don't love it. And I wish we could get better from Uzi. But he's in this antagonistic kind of phase where he's, like, even in the show, he was, like, kind of baiting, like, oh, guys, I got to tell you a secret. And obviously he knows what he's doing, because he thinks he's going to announce he's gay. And then he says something else about some song. It's like, bruh, what was it with this hit? What's with this queer baiting shit? Is you? If you don't want to say, don't say it. But don't get on stage and start playing games. Let's hear Lil Uzi Vert talk about it.
Hi, everybody. How y'all doing today? Do y'all like my outfit? And y'all know I'm crazy for real. Y'all know I'm crazy, right? I think everybody know I'm crazy. And you know what they say about crazy people? You better not get too close to them or they might bite.
Ah, shut up, man. Just put out some good music, put on a good show, and all this will not really matter. But, you know, he's in his antagonistic fucking phase. So I guess it is what it is. I guess it is what it blood clot is. All right. So moving on from that one. We have to talk about Grimes. I ripped her a new one the other day because of, obviously, the set was fucking terrible. But this time she redeemed herself. Grimes fucking redeemed herself. Wow. I watched this performance of her at Coachella weekend two, and I was really taken aback by how good it was. I was really reminded by her fucking greatness. It really kind of put me back into that space when Oblivion came out in the first place. And if anything, this performance was so good and such a contrast from the first weekend, I almost forgot the first weekend happened. That's how good this performance was. But then halfway through, I also thought to myself, why am I happy that she did her job? This is what she should have done. You get paid handsomely to do it. Do your fucking job. You don't get a pat on the back for doing your job. Then it reminded me, that's why Grimes, even though she's not a Nepo baby, she gives me Nepo baby vibes, you know? The kind of person that does want congratulations for fucking, you know, for saying excuse me after she sneezes or something. You know, the kind of person that wants a pat on the back for feeding her own baby. It's like, bro, that's what you're meant to do. You're a mum. So as much as I love the performance, I also think people are going a bit overboard because, you know, this is her job. But big up Grimes for fucking killing it. Oh, and by the way, the stage design is fucking sick. I know a lot of like underground DJs who I'm more, you know, have more affinity to, and I kind of, I'm part of more of that scene than the commercial stuff. But let's give these guys credit. When it comes to, EDM festivals and stuff and all this, whatever this version of music is, I'm not even sure if it's called, I don't even know what, if it's PC music or cyberpunk, whatever it is, right? These guys and girls in this area, this genre, they put on a fucking show. I really understand why these kids get so hyped about EDC. I would never go. The music would make my ears literally bleed. But at least you are having a you're going to see a show. The DJs are putting on a production. There's visuals. There's lights. There's smokes. There's fucking wind. Like this particular stage that Grimes has, it's an elevated cube that has projection screens on either, on every side of it, right? It's basically one big LED box. And she's standing, she's right at the top of the box. And she has this, she has a fan that's obviously meant to help her cool down, but it's placed under the decks. So it's blowing up at her when she's on top of the deck. So she has this effect of like the hair flying up in the air as she's playing. That kind of makes her look like she's like floating or levitating. It's fucking sick. And then the screens obviously have all these different graphics that play at the same time. So production wise, it's really fucking good to see. Again, even if you don't like the music, you can appreciate that most DJs, especially in the underground scene, they just want a black table, some TDJs and a mixer, and their head is down the whole time, not looking at the crowd. Some clubs that I've been to, underground clubs, they don't even like having a light on the DJ. They just have no lights, a completely black room. They don't even want you to look at the DJ. But at least with these guys, they're putting an effort into production. So maybe our underground community could take a sprinkling of this showmanship and put it into some of our parties, because some of our parties are a little bit bare bones, to be honest. And then they're charging you £50 to get in. It's like, what am I paying £50 for? Do you know what I mean? To fucking step on glass in the toilet as I'm about to take a bump of kit? No, thank you.
And mysterious deserts of Egypt, an incredible discovery. Using advanced technology, Grimes Corp was able to reconstruct ancient DNA found at Cleopatra's tomb. Through the miracle of science, they are now in the early stages of restoring her mind within a Simnec body. Only one thing is for certain. Mars will not remain ungoverned for long.
Anyway, that was amazing. I really enjoyed the performance, but like I said afterwards, I felt like, you know what, I'm not giving this fucking billionaire baby mother props for fucking doing her job. You, for your fucking Grimes, you fucking released Oblivion. We expected more from you. That's why we were all shocked and appalled when you couldn't play CD. Because in the fucking, for all the musical instruments that are available out there, let's call CDJs musical instruments. They're not really, but let's say they are. Of all the musical instruments that exist out there for you to play, CDJs are the easiest thing. You could probably teach your mum how to use CDJs in a day. Not any other instrument you could do that. So when she couldn't play with CDJs, I'm like, bro, what the fuck do you do every day then? Like, why can't you press pause and play? And like, just press the fucking, run the levers, the levels up and down. It's not that fucking difficult. So when she couldn't do that, it was fucking mind-boggling. An artist of her caliber couldn't fucking get CDJs to work. It's like, huh? Anyway, cool. That was really awesome. So big up Grimes for at least doing that. But that wasn't the best thing. The best thing about the Grimes set was the little clip they played in the beginning where she kind of, you know, poked some fun at the obviously horrible previous performance. And I'm going to play it for you now. It's a little clip that they did. It's pretty cool. A little trailer, right? Let me get this up for you, because this is really, really funny. I really fucking love this. So big up Grimes for having a bit of a personality and not taking things too seriously. But still, you know, you got paid probably a couple mil for this fucking set. Do your job. But this was really funny. This was really fucking funny.
Worst disaster in Coachella history.
Last weekend, the musician and DJ Grimes was supposed to have a comeback and release brand new music at California's most iconic music festival.
It will continue. I knew the last song about 2 hours ago.
needless to say, her fans were devastated.
This is a difficult thing to explain. We're having a major technical error where all the sound tempos are double speed, and I have not practiced the math because I'm not fast at math.
Of course, technical issues were to blame for the epic clusterfuck. But you gotta ask yourself what or who was behind them.
Unit 2, move into position. Units 3 and 4, maintain coverage of Sector 7. Unit 5, set up a perimeter with Unit 6. Copy that. Hold your fire until I get the signal.
Our camera spoke to various anonymous witnesses who espoused a range of theories as to the cause of the debacle.
Bruh, she can't DJ.
I'm telling you, dog, this shit with the machines. Her AI shit is fighting back.
The artist is now said to be recovering from severe trauma in an undisclosed location.
Grimes Corp has announced a full-scale investigation of the CDJ, vowing to leave no stone unturned.
Insiders claim DJ Anima has joined the investigation into the deck.
While details on her Weekend 2 return are murky, sources are divided. Will Grimes make the biggest comeback in Coachella history, or will Saturday be another shit show? Stay tuned for updates as this historic story unfolds.
So I thought that was pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. So big up her for, you know, at least trying to troll her way back into people's hearts. Still a much better turnaround than Frank Ocean. And it actually made me think about how disrespectful that Frank Ocean Coachella set was. I still can't get it out of my brain because I've been burned in real life by Frank Ocean. That one year I went to Primavera. Actually, it was the first time we went to Primavera. The first time we went to Primavera, and we went specifically to see Frank Ocean because obviously he doesn't play too much, right? Back in those days. And I swear to God, he must have canceled a week before, if not a couple days before the festival. And to make matters worse, he played a show, I think in like Norway or somewhere before the Coachella set. So people were really dubious that he'd appear at Coachella, sorry, at Primavera. But because he performed at some festival somewhere in Norway or somewhere in Scandinavia, a lot of Frank Ocean fans, myself included, were really, really happy. Because we were like, okay, cool, this gives us faith that he's going to come to fucking Primavera. Then he cancelled the day before. Obviously, he probably was on the bender, did too many poppers, whatever, something happened. But I remember just being like so annoyed at the lack of fucking care and the lack of grace, the lack of compassion that he had for the fans. And then when he did the same thing at Coachella, just going through the motions and doing that horrible set. It's like, bro, if you don't want to perform, I understand if you don't want to perform. I get it, right? It's kind of weird because when you're an artist like Frank Ocean and you fucking make White Ferrari, right? And you release all the music, you know, all the mixtapes that he's done over the years, the fans become, they just want more of you because you're so good at what you do. So it's kind of not the fans' fault. But if you're an artist and you don't want to perform, I understand it because sometimes performing can be its own type of hell. But then don't fucking tease us. Don't cock tease us, bro. If you don't want to perform, just have a rule where you don't do any festivals. You only do your own gigs from time to time or performances, whatever. Don't fucking take the gig. And then when you do the gig, you don't want to be there. Like, don't do that because you're fucking, it's a disservice to the fans who've done nothing wrong. So this Coachella performance from Grimes is proof that you can turn things around if you have some level of humility, if you're able to kind of laugh at yourself. Because, you know, Grimes made Oblivion. I'm sorry, girl, you made Oblivion. We hold you to a certain standard. You know what I mean? So thank you now that you've been able to fulfill that standard. Thank you now you've been able to show us who you actually are. And it was a fucking amazing set. She fucking smashed it. When Oblivion did come on the set, the crowd went obviously absolutely fucking bonkers. So she's clearly that girl. She just needs to remind people who she fucking was. Because especially in recent years, I'm not sure about you guys, but I definitely see her more as fucking Elon's baby mama, which is fucking a real insult to her because she's a great artist in her own like. Even though she's fucking annoying and she has annoying opinions and her voice is fucking grating, take all that aside, artistically, Grimes is fucking incredible. You don't make fucking Visions, Art Angels, and not be fucking good at what you do. Like, this isn't ghost producer shit. Like, she does a lot of this stuff herself. We've seen images and videos of her in the studio recording some of these bangers. Like, she's fucking incredible. But she lost her way, obviously. Like we all did, probably post-COVID. I don't really know. Maybe Elon, you know, finishing in her, frazzled her brain. But when it comes to the art of music, she's still top tier. So big up fucking Grimes. Big up fucking Grimes. Moving on from that. We have this, right? Courtesy. This to me is just more of a hating thing, I'm not going to lie. We have this courtesy of BBC. London Marathon happened the other day, or just yesterday, actually. London Marathon photos, courtesy of the BBC. I've always wanted to run this, and I've entered, like, I think 6 years in a row. I'm going to enter again when the ballot gets released. I think it gets released tomorrow. They have an official lottery ballot you can enter, and I never get in. And it's annoying to me that I never get in, because all of these fucking dumb charity outfit runners always get there. They always get a spot. These people who dress up as things. A cat, a dog, some bear thing. They always manage to get a spot at the fucking London Marathon, but I don't. So these joke pretender guys, or the ones that walk the marathon and talk with their friends or take pictures and shit, it's fucking annoying. So I'm going to try and enter tomorrow, or whenever the fucking ballot opens. I think it's tomorrow, and see Wagwan. But seeing some of these clips, big up this guy, by the way, Russell Cook. He's the one that run the length of Africa. He's a fucking G. Well, seeing some of these pictures and seeing some of these stupid outfits, right? Samaritans, charity. It just made me really angry, because all these people get a chance to run this prestigious fucking race, this amazing London Marathon, and they just always don't take it seriously. Or maybe they are, maybe they're not, who knows. But I just fucking hate the outfits. I fucking hate it, because I never get a chance to fucking run it. So hopefully my application goes through. Oh, fucking hell, Matt Hancock was there as well. I would have tripped him over. If I saw Matt Hancock running near me, I definitely would have tripped him up. I definitely would have tripped him over. Some person here doing a British Airways costume, like, fucking hell. I hate older people who just want to be kooky and like have a personality through weird outfits that they wear. Go fuck yourself. Someone called Sophie Raworth was there. Someone dressed up as a fucking camel. Look, another person taking pictures. Like, don't social media-fy running. Running is just what it is. Like, let's not social media-fy running. Someone taking their grandma that looks like she's about to die during the marathon. Look at that. She doesn't deserve this. Take her home. Give her a fucking wet, you know, a hot water bottle. Maybe some custard creams, maybe a cup of tea. She doesn't need this. Why is your mum, like, she got, is there a ventilator behind her? Is she plugged into fucking oxygen? And she's there all wrapped up, like, just barely alive. Not fair. And of course, you know, typical BBC presenters probably doing the banter jokes thing, people crossing the finishing line. And obviously the person who won it, no surprise, Kenyan. Big up Kenyan. What's on her name? Perez Jepchirchir. The first time a wheelchair non-disabled athletes received the same prize money. Cool. Good to see that as well. But yeah, I'm going to try and enter London Marathon tomorrow or when the ballot does open. And I hope to God that my entry does get put through. Because if they're putting through some of this shit, then let me fucking run there. All right? I bet you if I dress up as a gorilla, right, if I dressed up as fucking a black square like Black Lives Matter, they'd fucking invite me to go there, wouldn't they? Fucking hell. Hate it. Hate it so much. Okay, moving on from that. We've got this update courtesy of USA Today. Nike is laying off 740 employees at its Oregon headquarters before the end of June. How wild is that? 740 people are going to get their marching orders. They're going to get their P45s. Absolutely brutal, bro. I've been through one of these where mass layoff happens. And it's really, really excruciating, because you usually find out quite ahead of time. So you have loads of time in between where you're all waiting for your execution date. I don't know about you guys, but usually you find out, you know, some time ahead. And then when it comes around, it's brutal, because even though it's like sweeping cutbacks and a lot of people get fired, for some reason, you always think you won't be the one. You always think you're going to be special. Oh, no, they're going to really, like, I'm going to be the one that's going to get to stay. And it's never you. It's never, ever you. So that's what is hilarious. So it says Nike plans to lay off 740 employees at its Oregon headquarters before June 28th, the company has told state officials. The company notified state and local officials about the workforce reduction at its Beaverton, Oregon headquarters in a notice mandated by the Worker Adjustment Retraining Notification Act on Friday. The sportswear giant will be permanently reducing its workforce at its world headquarters in a second phase of impacts that would begin by June 28th. So these layoffs were the ones scheduled for June 28th, but they're now happening before. So business must be really bad. Wrote Nike Vice President Michelle Adams in a notice first reported by Reuters and Oregon Public Broadcasting. 2 months ago, Nike CEO John Donaghy told employees in a memo that the plan to reduce the workforce by 2% or more than 1,600 employees at the time. The company had 83,700 employees as of May 31st, 2003. Nike is always at our best when we are on the offense. The action that we're taking put us in the position to right-size our organization. Look at that phrasing, man. Corporates, man. To right-size our organization. So the people that get fired are the wrong size, even though you hire them. Even though some of these people are assuming as well. That's what happens when you get wide, you know, far-reaching, wide fucking cutoffs, cutbacks or layoffs. Usually as well, to make it sting even harder, usually the person that you're laying off just started a family, just bought themselves a dog, just moved into their new home, just bought a second home to rent out, just bought a new car, just booked a holiday, just booked a wedding. It always happens at the worst possible timing. It never happens just like a normal low. It always happens just after you've done a really big expense or you're looking to do another big expense down the line. That's how fucking horrible these things are, because I've been through them. So I'm sending these guys strength and solidarity and light, because it's not good. And then when they use right size as a fucking phrase to describe your outgoing, restructuring is fucking horrible. The actions that we're taking to put us in a position to right-size the organization to get our biggest growth opportunities as interest in sport, health, and wellness have never been stronger. So the interest in sport, health, and wellness have never been stronger, but you have to right-size your company to capitalize on these strengths of these areas, these verticals you want to capitalize on. How's that make sense? While these changes will impact approximately 2% of our total workforce, we are grateful for the contributions made by all Nike employees or teammates. By the way, isn't this the most annoying thing ever? They call Nike employees teammates. It's almost as annoying as when I used to do CrossFit. There was this thing in CrossFit, or I still do CrossFit by myself, sorry. I just don't do CrossFit in like a box. I'm not part of a box or anything, because those things are expensive and they're just full of white people that, you know, love to hear another man scream at them like they're in fucking army or something, which they're not, right? It's like fucking, it's a class that you pay £150 for per month to do free classes, and some fucking guy with a beard is telling you to jump up and down when you're doing burpees. Like, I'm already jumping. I know what to do. You don't need to shout at me like I'm in the fucking Marines, you fucking idiot. So I fucking hated boxes, but I still do CrossFit by myself. I just go on the website and just kind of do the workout on my own. But in CrossFit, they refer to people that do CrossFit as athletes for some reason. Oh, everyone's an athlete. If you move your body, it's like this whole thing to like change the way you think about fitness. It's like, no, brother, I'm just working out so I can fuck more bitches or something. Or so I can fit in Rick Owens, or so I can fit in Balenciaga. Like, also I look good in the beach or in a t-shirt when I'm hot in a club somewhere. I'm not doing this because I'm an athlete. I'm not an athlete. Like, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? We know what athletes are. I watch a lot of sports. I'm not those guys. I cheer and scream at things on TV, but just because I'm lifting a weight over my head, you know, in this fucking lovely air-conditioned gym, and I pay you money to teach me how to do this, that doesn't mean I'm an athlete. Technically, to be an athlete, someone has to pay me to do the sport. No one's paying me to do the sport. You take a direct debit out of my account every fucking month of £150 to do this shit workouts. That doesn't make me an athlete. Nike do the same weird thing with their fucking phrasing. They describe employees, or employees are known as teammates. It's like, huh? Teammates? We're not on a team. This is a company I work for to pay the bills. Like, a team. But to be fair to Nike, I used to work for them, right? Well, by proxy. Right? Yeah, I used to work for Nike many years ago when I was working in this store called 1948. So this store called 1948 in Shoreditch was a really cool store that Nike set up during the Beijing Olympics, right? And I used to work there in the store. And the idea about it at first, when they first got us to work there, was that we were going to be like half employees of the store. And also we were going to work in the head office. And basically the idea behind it was like Nike were launching their sportswear division, which is kind of their streetwear side of things, right? So they had their streetwear side of things, which is kind of like lifestyle-y type of clothing. And obviously with streetwear and few stuff on it and limited edition shoes. And we'd work in this cool store in Shoreditch, had limited edition stuff. And we'd also do, you know, whatever sportswear shit and launches, whatever it may be. And obviously we worked there for a long time. I worked there for about a long time. I think it was like 5 years or something. So it was pretty cool. But one thing I realized about working at Nike, they have a lot of employees and no one leaves because it's a really good job. If you work at Nike, especially if you work in like, even if you work in retail, I'm assuming, but if you work in the head office more so, you get a lot of free clothes because they're always doing shoots in there. They're always doing lookbooks or people always kept showing, you know, stuff that's going to be launching in new seasons. So there's boxes and stuff just lying around for you to take if you want. Clothing that they give you, shoes that you can just take if someone does a shoot. If you get friendly with other people in certain divisions, you can get given free shit. So it's a really cool job. And for the most part, depending on what area of the business you're working, the job isn't that strenuous. You're also working for a streetwear brand or for a sportswear brand that you really give a fuck about and you love. So that kind of adds to all of this. But I swear to God, like people that work at Nike are like, there was a I worked there. I'm not sure when it opened, but this is the Wilson brothers designed the interior for it. It's really cool how they designed it. All this stuff is modular. So the idea behind it was this stuff could look like the bleachers in a sports place, right? A sports field in America. You have these kind of like stair things, right? So the idea behind it is that you can move them around and make them modular and change them around. And obviously you have this amazing neon insulation here. It looks like a football pitch that has NSW, Nike sportswear. And then the E is lit up in green to symbolize East London. So it's pretty cool. This is our staff room here at the back. This is what it would look like every day when we're in there. And the floor was made up of recycled bits of like old Nike shoes. They kind of, you know, smashed it all together and made this kind of tar thing. So everything was like, you know, what's your thing called? Everything was environmentally friendly type of thing. And they had an arch here with another room, which was the room where we did like exhibitions and little fucking, you know, private view stuff, launches of shoes, DJs would play there, street food thing. It was a pretty cool job. I'm not going to lie, the time that I had it. So that was obviously pretty okay. But to end this, oh, that's what I'm saying, but unfortunately no one leaves this type of jobs. Like at the time that I was working there, I don't know when exactly I worked there, when it started, when did it open? I forgot what year it was exactly it opened, but whatever year it opened, sometime whenever the, when was the Beijing Olympics? Beijing, that's when it opened, Beijing Olympics, 2008. So I worked there in 2008. There's still people working there right now. There's still people working at 1948 right now. Sorry, at Nike right now who I met back then. So people don't leave. So I kind of understand why Nike had to lay off so many people, because they must have a lot of bloat. They must have a lot of employees there who they, you know, have kept on even during COVID. So maybe this cull was needed, because I don't necessarily think Nike need to have 83,700 employees. That doesn't make any sense. That's too many people for a company like Nike. So it makes sense that they're probably reducing them. But unfortunately for the people that are there, it's not cool at all, especially this time of year. Like, Jesus Christ, you know what I mean? And most likely the experience that you have there, you know, will it translate to other areas of the industry that you want to get involved in? Who knows? But strength and solidarity to everybody at Nike who's getting cut. It's fucking brutal. But, you know, at least you know now it's coming and you can kind of go and do your own thing. So big up the people there. Big up the people there. Moving on. So we have this to talk about. Let's talk about this. Antisocial Social Club, Spring Summer 2024. I'm surprised, to be honest, because I've always thought of Antisocial Social Club, for lack of a better term, please forgive me, for being a bit of a scammer brand, because they're well known for never shipping things on time and they have a horrible reputation of it. If you go on their Instagram, I'm not sure if it's the same now, but on Instagram you'll see so many people complaining about where's my stuff. And it always put me off to buy the stuff, because I quite like it. I like how silly it is. you know, I've always liked the name of the brand. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Neek from back in the day, because I knew of him since the Nike Talk days back in the day. I still remember him having one of the most epic interviews, actually. This might have been when Virgil was around. He had a really cool interview. I think he might have been with Virgil or somebody, Neek Lurk, where he spoke. He's a very mysterious kind of private dude who does anti-social social club, but he used to be a big-time poster on Nike Talk, right? And he's just Asian dude that has this like interesting style. He usually had he had like big hair, skinny jeans. He'd always be wearing. So, but he's a very kind of, you know, elusive kind of character. This dude here, right? He's the owner of fucking that's a version of Neek I remember, of back in the day of fucking Nike Talk fame. But now obviously it looks a bit different, and he's obviously made millions off of this brand, Anti-Social Social Club, that I'm sure most of you are aware of and know. But over the years, it's kind of suffered a bad reputation because they don't ever ship stuff on time. Sometimes they don't ever ship stuff at all, but the brand's still running. So big up Neek Lurk for still doing that. So they've got a new collection out at the moment, spring, summer 2024. Let's see what it actually looks like, what we have here. We have some nice, I forgot what those bottles are called again. Are they Nalgene? I think it's a Nalgene, right? So that might be a Nalgene collaboration with the bubbles in it. I forgot what that Asian drink is called. Bubble tea, whatever it's called. So that looks quite cool. You've got a nice hat here that might be is that an Ambush collaboration? Oh no, I don't need to get in touch with Ambush because they also don't update their customers. We've got a collaboration, or it looks like we've got guards or maybe lids for the Apple AirPod Maxes with the Anti-Social Social Club thing in kind of engraved there. We have this really cool thing that I really want. This is what I'm really looking for, which is this bag as a collaboration with Goyard, and it's got the Anti-Social Social Club written on it on the outside. The funny thing about these Goyard bags, which I'm surprised about, now everybody's into like wearing satchels. What's his name? The guy from Euphoria is always known for wearing like handbags and shit. And it's become like a thing now at the moment. Guys wearing like, you know, what you deem to be women's handbag is like a thing. I'm surprised that standard, I know it's a very normie girl bag, but I'm surprised the Louis Vuitton tote bag that all the girls love to wear. I forgot what it's called, but it's a particular bag that loads of girls, especially in London, love, especially like receptionists and stuff and sales agents and recruiter girls. If you know them, you know the personality, but recruitment girls love this bag. I don't know what the name of it is called, whatever this bag is called, this shape. But I've always thought this would be a cool bag for a dude to wear also, this tote bag. And I'm surprised it hasn't kind of taken off. Maybe it's a bit too feminine looking, but I don't necessarily think it is if you compare it to a Goyard bag. They're kind of the same thing, really. But yeah, that Goyard collaboration bag is really, really cool. So I'd like to see that. Nice ashtray. We've also got a hoodie. I think there's a hoodie that's an Anti-Social Club. That's the thing with Anti-Social Club lookbooks. They do a lot of like letting the model wear their own clothes thing. So I don't know if the stuff they've got in the lookbook is actually the stuff that's available, or if this is the guy's clothes that he's wearing. Like, I think the hat is Anti-Social Club. The t-shirt is. I don't know if the jeans are. I doubt the Vans are. Maybe that shirt is. Maybe that hoodie isn't. I don't know. So it's a bit all over the place. That's a fucking great jumper. I love this jumper. This jumper here in, what look is it? Look number 5. ASSSC. Like in the college kind of font. It's fucking hard. I'd wear the fuck out of that jumper. There's a t-shirt that's been wrapped around a girl's waist to make it look like a dress. Again, that t-shirt is cool. I don't know if the jeans are part of it or not. You've got a cool hoodie. I like the logo on the shorts there. That's a really cool pair of shorts. It reminds me of the old like Patagonia shorts from back in the day. But she's kind of wrapped them up to make them look smaller, so they're probably a bit long. But still, I love it. Oh, there's also an Anti-Social Social Club key ring that's also made to look like a hoodie. That's pretty cool. Key ring stencil type of thing. The jeans with the stars in it, I'm not too sure if that's Anti-Social Club. Maybe that's Neek's mum, actually. That could be Neek's mum. I don't know. Who knows? That could be his mum or some lady. Who knows? The belt is really cool. Again, the Goyard wallet is really awesome. As is this Swiss Army knife, I'm assuming. Maybe it's a Swiss Army knife here. Anti-Social Club as well. That is pretty cool. I'm not mad at that in the slightest. Oh, look at that hat. I like that hat. I want that hat. I want that hat so bad. I think that's based on a cartoon, isn't it? It's a black cat that has these yellow cones sticking out of it. I think that's based on a cartoon. I can't picture the cartoon, but I think that's a cartoon character. I can't picture it, but that looks really cool. As does the coach jacket. I like this. Also, the classic hoodie. Yeah, I think this might be my favorite look. Look number 13 might be my favorite. The Goyard bag with the coin purse hanging off of it and the Anti-Social Club hoodie. is absolutely harder than hard. I love that. That is really fucking nice. So I'm all for that. The watch is really cool. Oh, there's a collaboration with a watch too. What with a there's an Anti-Social Social Club Rolex. No way. That's gonna be some money, isn't it? There's a fucking Rolex collaboration. Wowzers. That's gonna be some peas. Nice hoodie there again. The hoodie with the grid design is pretty cool. Now Jen again, nice hat. Oh, I love that logo on the coach. Is that a coach jacket or a shirt? That's a coach jacket, isn't it? Yeah, I'm definitely getting this. This logo is fucking amazing. Kind of looks like a 90s inspired type of logo. It's giving rave. It's giving LSD. I'm not a fan of that hoodie. The script look is fine. I love that. The hat is really cool as well. The Anti-Social Club self-doubts corduroy snapback. I'm not mad at that in the slightest. There's another one as well with the t-shirt on it. We've got the key ring logo there. There's a wooden spoon. Oh my days. Big up the man them and the gal them that got beat with a wooden spoon. Uche would probably know about this. Big up the people that got beat with a wooden spoon. When I was growing up, my parents would sometimes beat us in the hands with a wooden spoon if we did something wrong. So when I see wooden spoons now, I get a bit of PTSD. I kind of shiver when I see a wooden spoon because I remember having to hold my palms out and get fucking slapped in my palms with a fucking wooden spoon if I did something wrong. And if you pulled your hand away, it'd make your parents angrier. Like, it made them more angry that you were trying to avoid pain. That you were trying to avoid physical abuse, it'd make them angrier and they'd hold your hand there. Or if my mom and dad were being extremely, you know, evil at that point, God forgive me for saying that, but if they were trying to be extra mean, they would get my brothers to hold my hand. And me and my brothers are both crying our eyes out. If I'm about to get hit, he's crying because he has to hold my hand, because if he doesn't, he gets beat. And I'm crying that it has to get to this. Honestly, man, when I see wooden spoons, I fucking shiver. So big up the crew who got beat with wooden spoons. If you didn't get beat with wooden spoons, then you got away with it. Honestly, you got away with it. You got away with it, man. You lived a good life. You were born with a silver spoon. What else do we have here? More hoodies. We got some luggage too. Is this collaboration with Ramoa? I love this. We got a Ramoa collaboration probably. I'm not mad at that in the slightest. Self-doubts t-shirt, ASSC t-shirt again. We have a sweatpants that says bananas. I'm not mad at that. We have this night tote bag actually that I'm not mad at all with. Some good stuff, I'm not going to lie. Some good stuff. We got coach jackets. Or I don't think it's a coach jacket actually. That might be the same jacket there. It's like a bomber. I'm a bit upset it's not a coach jacket. I wanted that logo on a coach jacket. It's like a bomber jacket, I'm assuming. But it's got like a funnel neck. What do you call it? Neckline on it. It's not like a coach jacket type of, you know, thing. So that's okay, I guess. I just don't like the elasticated bottoms. I hate elasticated waistbands on jackets, to be fair. I want my jacket straight down to the fucking end. Of course, again, I love this hat. I really want this hat. I really want that hat. It's kind of like, to me, like a streetwear version of the, what's his name again? Loverboy hat. Do you guys remember this one? It's like a Charles Jeffrey. Big up Charles Jeffrey. Black people love this hat. Honestly, big up Charles Jeffrey, because I knew him a little bit, or, you know, got introduced to him because the company I was working for one summer, I was interning at this company, and his studio was next door to mine, and he was always really nice. Charles Jeffrey, the owner of Loverboy. But it's funny that black people love this hat because he's extremely gay. Very flamboyant, very kind of theater kid energy. Extreme, yeah, he'd have all the great models walking by and walking his fucking studio. So it's pretty sick to see black people embrace this brand, not knowing, you know, the person behind it is like, you know, he's out there really. I love him, to be fair. I love Charles Jeffrey. But it's cool that black people fucking love this hat. Especially guys in Atlanta. Guys and girls in Atlanta, they fucking love this fucking hat. They're all over it. So big up the Atlanta Mandem for loving that hat. We continue. So I want that as well. I just think there must be something about black people in peacock, innit? Because I immediately resonated with this hat. I immediately was drawn to it. There must be something in our blood, in our DNA about peacocking and like getting attention or just looking like fucking psychos. Like, because why would I like this? You know, it looks fucking dumb, but I fucking want it. I really do. And then again, a last one too with more stuff. Oh, I love this scarf. It's almost like a see-through scarf, isn't it? Like a mesh one. Looks pretty cool. All right, cool. I'd love to see it. Spring, summer 2024. Obviously, you've got the Rolex collaboration there also. You've got the Goyard collaboration. It looks pretty cool. And we've also got what looks... I don't know if this is actual collaboration with Apple or if this is just covers for the earbuds. Either way, I love it. Let's see the blurb. Our spring 2024 major collection is based on a bold statement for our brand. We hope the luxury items in the collection, including notable collaborations with Pro Hunter, Maison Raksha, disrupt our seasonal drop. You won't find our tag on luxury products like this anywhere else, and this is the only ones we're making. Elsewhere in the capsule, it's going to be available on April 20th. So let's see. It should be available on their website now. Let's see what the prices are saying. Let's see what's sold out. That's always interesting to see if people have the same taste as I when it comes to the shit that's available. What's sold out and what isn't? Text to join exclusive access. Oh, it's all sold out. What? It's all gone already. Oh shit. And a strength, I never thought it would be like this. Sold out. No, you can't even click it. Wow. Big up Anti-Social Social Club. What a fucking G. I love it. The complete, it's all gone. Okay, fair play. Well, it's there. In case it's back there, you know what it looks like. In case it's back there, you know what it looks like. Moving on from that one, let's talk about this. So, as some of you guys know, Kendrick, and Kendrick and Drake have been going through a little bit of a back and forth at the moment. And for some reason, Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, has decided to jump in and get involved also. And I have to be honest, I don't know why he did, because his verse and his contribution to this beef is, number one, not needed. And number two, quite trash. And I'm a big fan of Ye. You guys know how much of a Ye fanboy I am on here. I fucking suck his balls and he's fucking taint and his shaft all fucking day long. But even I have to admit, as a fan of his music, as a fan of his artistry, his contribution to this beef was not needed. I don't know why he's even getting involved. No one's calling his name. It's mostly a beef between Kendrick Lamar and Drake. And obviously the people that have sided with Kendrick, that'd be Metro Boomin and Future, and maybe The Weeknd, and maybe Travis Scott. But that's it. Ye is trying to get himself involved in this beef by dropping a Like That remix with one of the worst verses I've heard in a long time. And a reminder to me as a fan of Ye that he's still a great musician. We've seen it with Vultures. He's still a top tier musician. But when it comes to a rapper, you see the impact of him loving Donald Trump and doing the Hitler thing, because I think the Trump and Hitler thing didn't damage him, obviously, career-wise, but I think it damaged him in terms of his friends in hip-hop. Because I think a lot of people in hip-hop, whether they try and pretend they're liberal or they basically don't want to be aligned with somebody who might be a right-winger, who might be into Hitler shit, or who might be talking about the Jews the way they are because they, you know, they like having money and they like having a career. So I think because he went on that tilt, that fucked up his rapper-friend relationships. So now we don't get Kanye having the access to all the great writers that are helping him behind the scenes back in the day, because that was the thing that he was great at. Producing, putting together the best producers in one room, make a good song. But also having the best rappers and writers help him write bars, because it's been known that, you know, he always has help with bars. But nowadays, I think Kanye writes most of his stuff himself. I think nowadays. I get the feeling. You could hear it from the way he speaks and what he's saying, because he doesn't really say much. There's some funny bars here and there, some funny lines that could be good captions. But for the actual verse itself, it's pretty shit. I'm not going to lie. Especially when you consider the caliber of what Drake's reply was, right? Drake's reply that he did, the Take Care fucking one, that Take Care tune, was of a really high level, especially when you think he was using AI, especially with him being fucking AI voice of Tupac and fucking Snoop Dogg. For Ye to come through and drop this, it's not good enough. It's really not good enough.
You know we had to get the hooligans up here. We're gonna take this pussy nigga out. Yo, Dot, I got you.
Yeah. If you like, that's the only good thing about this song. For once, Ye did it. When people do remixes of songs nowadays, they devalue the term remix, because all they do is add their verse. Ye actually took the song and remixed it, then added his verse. That's what remixes used to be back in the day. You take a song and you remix it, whether it's extending the hook, whether it's fucking taking out the drop, you do something to fuck around with a tune. You'd remix the fucking song. But nowadays, a remix is just simply you adding your voice to something, which is weird because it's not. It's almost like how social media has redefined what POV means, right? Point of view. It's not exactly what it actually means now. It's completely something else. So yeah, the beat is decent. And again, it's the best thing about it. But the verse is shite. Let's go back again from the top.
You know we had to get the hooligans up here. We're going to take this pussy nigga out. Yo, Dot, I got you.
Stop, won't stop. I just fucked your bitch in a Sean John tank top. Treat a bad bitch like she average. I treat a bad bitch like a fat bitch.
Like, what does that have to do with anything? You fuck some. Like, he's trying to say, I guess he's trying to mention Sean John, because that's, if you don't know, that's, what's his name? That's P. Diddy's fashion line that he did back in the day, which was one of the, quite good to be fair, and one of the first kind of prominent, high fashion lines from a noteworthy black celebrity, or anybody actually, that was black back in the day. And he was trying to relaunch it before he obviously, you know, all these allegations and accusations of him basically being involved in sex trafficking and shit, and all the pink cocaine and shit, which I want a bit of, please, if you don't mind. But, I don't know why he's mentioning it. He's obviously mentioning Diddy because of what he's going through. He's trying to goad the whole council. Because the thing with Ye that I don't like about him, two things I don't like about my guy, my goat. Number one is his refusal to read. Ye thinks reading is almost like cheating his own genius. Like if he reads, it's going to stifle or squash his fucking genius. He does everything through feelings. And if you know anything about me, I'm very anti-feelings. I think feelings are fleeting. They're not really, they're not conducive to clear thought. It's just annoying. I hate people that just only are feelings based, and it's kind of bitch made. I despise it. So because he's kind of feelings based, he kind of feels if he gets more information on something, it's going to stifle his kind of immediate kind of reaction to things, which is annoying, because in some cases when it comes to his art, cool, be feelings based. But when it comes to when you're speaking about social issues or politics, maybe read, isn't it? Maybe read something, please, for the love of God. And if you still have your opinion, fair enough. At least it's coming from an informed place. Don't just spout out your shit because you want to. Anyway, whatever. I hate that thing about him, right? And then the other thing I really despise about him is just this, like, this obsession with cancel culture. Ye is obsessed with cancel culture, probably more than Joe Rogan. I swear to God. He's obsessed with cancel culture. Because in his head, Ye has this thing where he thinks no one should ever be cancelled ever. Like, there's no one should ever be cancelled, which is kind of weird because it almost means, like, he thinks no one can ever do anything wrong that would warrant them having the privilege of their, like, you know, amazing job what they have that's been given to them by the public, kind of, get taken away from them. Because cancel culture doesn't really affect your real life. It just means it might hamper your, you know, entertainment career. But you still have an option to just get a job. You know what I mean? It's not that difficult. It's not like you can't exist anymore and you get fucking executed in a, you know, in the court of, in the fucking court of public opinion, or in the public square, which is fucking social media. You just, sometimes your opportunities in this privileged world that you live in, whether it's content creation, whether it's an artist, they might get stifled a bit. Not that big of a deal. But Ye has this thing where he's obsessed with being anti-cancel culture. Maybe it's a defense for his own things because he always gets cancelled here and there. But he's only mentioning Diddy because of that. It does nothing to do with the tune. Like, okay, you fuck someone in a Sean Paul tank top. And what? The picture of him in a tank top with Metro, it's kind of dusty anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of giving divorced dad that just met, you know what I mean? Even though his wife's not that young, but it's kind of giving divorced dad with a new girlfriend. Like, you know what I mean? You're nearly 50, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Tone up the arms or just put them away. So I didn't really like the fucking yay, the Sean Paul, the Sean John fucking line. It's just dumb.
Never let me get money again. On my cat wings when they get funny again. Yeah, you see they try.
That's a really good bar about him, you know, don't let him ever get money, because I've always said, like, Kanye was never gonna change the moment he became a billionaire off of Yeezy. because that was the validation he needed, that, okay, I am a genius, I am a god, because he proved that, you know, his ideas were of high enough value that the masses, not just the, because that's the thing people don't really give him credit for. Yeezy wasn't only a sneakerhead thing. Yeezy was the first time on my life, I swear to God, not sure if you guys are the same, but Yeezy and Adidas was the first time I saw regular people wearing sneakers. Like, I saw regular people wearing 350s, regular mums and dads going shopping and stuff wearing 350s. You never saw that with other sneakers, even Jordans. It was mostly sneakerheads and people that wanted to be cool. But when regular mums and dads were wearing Yeezys, that's when I knew, okay, cool, Ye's onto something. So the moment he did make that kind of money, it's impossible. He's got a tune about it, right? You can't tell me nothing. Like, you know, how can you tell someone something when they made a billion? It's impossible. Tried to count me out. I like that. We just hit a number one. We right back. 500 down on the bottom. 500 up at the top. Titanium grills. Call that smile on the rocks. I done had everything that you're able to get. I ain't been a drill too. I ain't gonna lie. It was chops. All right. Another one, volume one. Then it's two and three. Vultures on repeat. Still feel like Pablo, drug dealer chic. Pluto sent the drones, it hit like Metro Beats. It's a rap for niggas. Where's Lucien? Serve your master, nigga. You caught a little bag for your masters, didn't you? Lifetime deal, I feel bad for niggas. So that's obviously a Drake insult, because they're saying he's in business with Lucien Grange. Lucien Grange is his master, massa, whatever, slave connotations. Shit bar. Drake doesn't need to reply to that. That's fucking garbage. And the thing about Ye that he doesn't understand, he's shown us his cards, how emotional and how worried he was at the thought of Drake allegedly smashing Kim Kardashian back in the day, right? I don't think that's a point of why he doesn't like Drake, but he's shown us he's very conscious and very jealous and very aware of Drake. If Drake comes back and says on a record, no, I actually did fuck him and I fucked Kylie and I fucked whoever else, how's Ye going to react to this? Imagine if Drake comes out and says, you know what, I actually fucked Bianca Senzori. Your actual wife? No, I fucked her too. Kanye might unalive himself. Like, he's so worried, and so he has this thing about Drake that he can't let go of. I don't know what it is about Drake that annoys him, but he seems to really be worried about Drake for some reason. He gets under his skin in some regard. This isn't enough, to be honest, because if Drake comes back out and destroys him, I don't want to see this guy crying. Niggas. Y'all so out of sight, out of mind. I can't even think of a Drake line. Play J. Cole, get the... Come on, man. I can't even think of a... Like, what? Bro, you know your whole house, but like, that's... I remember he used to say it a lot. Like, he used to get annoyed at the Kardashians back in the day when he was obviously with Kim. He'd get annoyed that they would all be bumping Drake in the fucking house. Look, we all know, like, everybody has to say they hate the guy, but every time everyone's Spotify rap comes out at the end of the year, guess who's number one? Bitch, you guessed it, Drake. Pussy dry, play this shit back 130 times. By the way, that's really funny. That J. Cole diss is really good, by the way, right? Let's go back to that J. Cole diss. Out of sight, out of mind. I can't even think of a Drake line. Play J. Cole, get the pussy dry. Play this shit back 130 times. So that's just a funny line, because J. Cole's had this boner about fucking, you know, Kanye. I think the False Prophet song was all about Kanye. So I think Ye's known about this, and obviously he's kind of, you know, let him know, hey, you're fucking garbage. But imagine how you must feel if you're J. Cole. You were right not to get involved in the beef, because now it's getting really personal and it's getting very petty and secrets are being revealed. And probably J. Cole doesn't have the heart to really beef with somebody and be evil and petty and vindictive. So he waves a white flag. But now Ye's coming at you, telling you that your songs make girls' pussies dry. Basically saying that J. Cole scares all the hoes. And I think he put a meme out, actually. I think Ye did a meme on his Instagram, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see. I think he put out a meme taking fun at J. Cole's quality of music, or lack thereof, which is really funny. So if you're J. Cole now, you wave the white flag. Do you come back out and say, oh, no, he deleted it. Cool, he deleted it. He deleted it. Unfortunately, he deleted it. What did he say here? What? I'm closing my Instagram account. My name is Ye. No brand or numbers gonna force me to call myself what they don't want. What? Oh, he's so fucking emotional, isn't it? Jesus Christ. But he did share some meme about J. Cole. Let's see if I can find it. where it's really funny. Let's see, Kanye, J. Cole meme. He shared it just recently. There we go, that's the one. This meme here. Ye shared this meme. It says, you listen to J. Cole? No. And then the second image is of the girl going down on the guy. Because he said he doesn't listen to J. Cole. So clearly, if you're fucking J. Cole, what do you do here? Do you get back involved? Do you tag yourself back in, even though you wave the white flag? Because Kanye's coming at you to say that you don't make music for the hoes. Girls don't like what you do. You're boring. You send people to sleep. You get girls' pussy dry. What do you do now? You backed yourself into a corner, innit?
Young dope dealer selling dope, is you like that? Kicking doors, kicking in doors, is you like that? Young throw nigga selling lows, is you like that? All 24, you on go, is you like that? Niggas from the bottom really like that. Stepping in Balenci's, if you like that. Pop another bottle, if you like that.
He was once a thug from around the world.
Bitch didn't get no AP shit.
Anyway, that's it. I think it was terrible personally. I didn't personally like it. It's not worthy of a response. But if it does get a response and Drake absolutely flamed his ass, I don't want to hear Ye complaining. I don't want to hear fucking Ye complaining. I swear to fucking God. Moving on. Let's quickly read this as I end. This is the last article before I end. So this article is courtesy of The Telegraph regarding Berghain. Another article about Berghain. Berghain sometimes goes through these phases, isn't it, where they get loads of press all at one time and then no one talks about the club again. So I wonder what's going on. Did something happen? Have like loads of people, you know, fucking realized where it is? Like what's happened? It's just part of the news cycle. I wonder what's happened that's kind of spurned all these articles and videos and stuff popping up all over the place. But anyway, regardless, The Telegraph have an article titled How I Got Into the World's Most Exclusive Nightclub, courtesy of The Guardian, written by a writer called Alex Barton. So let's check this out and see what Alex Barton said about his or their experience at Berghain. This is a fucking brilliant picture. This basically situates me straight away. If you haven't been Berghain, this is the front. This is where you queue up. And it's funny because these guardrails here is the moment where you're starting to, your heart starts to beat really quickly. You start to get goosebumps. Your throat starts to dry up, probably because you sucked some cocks before you went there. Why not? But before you hit this barrier, you're probably talking to a lot of people. I know I am. I'm a chatty motherfucker. So I'm chatting around to people. I'm asking them how long they've been here, who they're here to see, if they've got a number for somebody for some drugs. I'm doing whatever I'm doing in a queue. But the moment you hit this barrier, it's like an unspoken rule. Everybody gets quiet. So it's really noisy before you get to this barrier because it's a long queue. But the moment you hit the snake barrier thing that looks like where you'd be in a theme park, suddenly it gets quiet. And everyone just starts like looking and judging because usually here's a door, right? That's the door you go in. And obviously you snake and you're here on the wall about to go. And the security guards or the bouncers, the door pickers, they're usually called, I think they're called door pickers. But I don't know how you can call them, but let's just say bouncers. They're the ones that select people to go in. And they usually look at you, give you a little 2-second look up and down. And either say in or they tell you to not tonight and they point you this way and you have to walk this way to go out. This queue here along the wall is the VIP guest, is the guest list queue. So if you've got guest list from an artist or whoever works there, you queue up here. And this is also the queue for re-entry because Berghain, unlike other fucking clubs in the world, like in London, piece of shit London, London for some reason doesn't allow re-entry. Once you go into a club in London, you're basically kidnapped, right? You're basically fucking kidnapped. You're basically a hostage. Yeah, Free Palestine. You're basically a fucking hostage. So in Berghain, at least, you can go back in as much as you want. But you have to, I think the re-entry price is like €5 or 10. I forgot how much it is, but there's a price for it. But if you want to re-enter and you've already got a wristband, you queue up over here. And also, the thing about this is another queue. So if you come back and you're too fucked up, they won't let you in. So you have to be on your best behavior. But yeah, this brings back a lot of memories, man. A lot of fucking good memories. And usually you can hear everybody dancing already here, going crazy. It's fucking awesome. Let's read the article. How do you get into Berghain? That is a million euro question that has eluded clubbers since the venue opened its doors in 2004. Head bouncer Sven Markard and his gang of Berlin enforcers are responsible for curating the crowd, and they do so with a savage determination that leaves around half of those who try to enter out in the cold. On a chilly Saturday night, Bergheim Q stretches around the industrial estate on the border of Kreuzberg and Friedrichshain for more than 800 yards as it does every weekend. We can hear bass booming from within the intimidated building ahead. The queue's atmosphere intensifies as you near the door. It doesn't. The queue actually quietens as you get to the door. At the end of the door, everyone's fucking drinking, sharing fucking champagne and cigarettes. As you get to the barriers, it quietens. Trust me. Anyway, it continues. Any chatter or merriment that existed further. Okay, he says it here. At the back dies out. Exactly. Any chatter or merriment that existed further back dies out. Most people lined up are wearing the Bergheim uniform, which is black leather. Mainly are carrying backpacks, presumably filled with food and drink to sustain themselves while they are waiting live for 6 hours. Full confession here. When I take a backpack to Bergheim, I don't have food in there. I don't have fucking water in there. I have another outfit. I'm not going to lie. I'm one of those losers. If I'm in there for, let's say like 16 hours, maybe 2 days, I've got another outfit in there. I have another outfit. I have wet wipes. I have some deodorant. I have a couple of moisturizers and shit. That's what I'm doing in there. I'm one of those fucking losers. I'll change my outfit after like 12 hours and put on some other thing. So I'm one of those fucking freaks. I don't have practical things. I have, you know, fashion things. In the surrounding area, small groups huddle to discuss the tactics while swigging Berliner beers. Taxi whisk the rejected souls away to other venues or presumably home or to bed. Fortunately for me, I won't be joining the main line. I'm on the guest list. Oh, I've never been on guest list, to be fair. I've never even asked for guest list, I don't think. Have I ever asked for guest list? I don't think so. Yeah, I don't believe in that also. I don't think that's cool. I do know this DJ called FKM4A? DJ, is that his name? How do you say his name? Yeah, that is. That's his name. FKAM4A. This DJ here plays at Bergheim quite often. I really like him. Really, really cool. But he did a bit of an oopsie because one day I do remember he put out a guest listing on his Instagram. Hey, I'm playing at Bergheim. If you want to be on my guest list, DM me or something and I'll choose the best people to get on there. And he promptly deleted it, which I think the Bergheim people told him, hey, take that shit down. Because I think the Bergheim guest list, for how exclusive the club is kind of a bit of a responsibility. You're kind of responsible for who you put on the guest list. If they do some madness in there, it probably looks bad on you. So you can't just be offering your guest list to strangers that you don't know. Because, you know, what if they go in there and do some madness? Right? I mean, it's going to look bad on you. So I'm glad he took it down because I like him and I don't want to see him get banned or get blacklisted from playing there because he's a pretty sick DJ. But I don't believe in asking DJs for guest lists, by the way. Some freaks do that. Some freaks, some fucking psychos, right? Will go to the Bergheim main site. They'll go on the fucking program. They'll see who's coming up, like who's playing. Like they'll go on May. They'll see who's coming up and they'll probably check, I don't know, a DJ that maybe isn't well known or somebody that they don't know. They'll click on the fucking lineup or whatever and they'll fucking DM someone and say, hey, I know you don't know me, but can you put me on your guest list? It's like, bruh, you don't know this person and you're asking them for a guest list to one of the most exclusive clubs in the world. Like, do you have any shame? Like, people that just ask this type of stuff are fucking freaks. Like, you need to give your head a wobble. I wouldn't even ask guests. Like, I find it hard asking guest lists from people that I know, like, personally. Actually know who would probably be happy to give it to me. I can't do that. How about somebody you don't know? Come on, bruh. Makes no sense. But because it's so hard to get in, people just want to increase their chances of entry. So they're willing to put their shame, their pride to one side and just kind of say, please, like fucking Oliver Twist, can I have some more? Can I have a fucking guest list? They've got their hands out. But you shouldn't do that. I don't think so. Try your luck like everybody else. If you don't get in, it's one of the best cities in the world to club. You can go somewhere else. It's not that deep. You know what I mean? It really isn't that deep. Also, don't wear black as a suggestion. Don't listen to everybody online. The videos that people do, don't listen. Just wear what you usually would wear on a night out. And that might actually increase your chances because you'll actually feel comfortable in what you're wearing and you won't look like you've put on a fucking techno, you know, Halloween costume with your fucking, you know, what you call it, harness and your stupid PVC div. People can tell you don't wear that. You've got your nails painted and you're touching your hands all the time. You look awkward. Like, don't do that. Just wear what you'd usually wear on a night out, and most likely you might get in, as opposed to putting on a stupid fucking, you know, outfit that you found on fucking Amazon. Anyway, continuing. So, yeah, fortunately for me, I won't be joining the main line. I'm on a guest list. I make my way past the punters to join a significantly shorter queue. As I walk down the dirt path with the metal fencing either side of the cage crowd, my smugness turns into anxiety. I've warned that a spot on the guest list doesn't guarantee admission, exactly, and even seasoned Burgerland patrons occasionally get turned away. The extent of the mystery around the door policy has even led to a creation of the BurgerlandTrainer.com, which allows prospective candidates to test their technique in the online simulation. Having spoken with dozens of people about how to succeed and receive wisdom is, don't be too drunk, avoid being in big groups, speak German, and know who is playing that night and wear black. Again, bullshit fucking advice. Number one, don't use this website. It's fucking bullshit. I've never used a website. I don't give a fuck about it. I'm glad I never made a video on it. Also, it's fucking corny and lame and really dorky to be sitting there pretending, oh, I'm like, fuck off, dumb shit. Next, the don't be drunk thing should be normal. Right? Why are you going to a club or a nightclub fucked up? You should be going there to get fucked up. You shouldn't be going there fucked up. It makes no sense. So that obviously don't do. Avoid being in big groups. That also is dumb. Like, if you have friends that you're out with, what are you going to do? Like, just pretend that you're not with your friends and don't go in. If you all can't go in, then you don't go in. Like, don't be like, there are some people, I don't know if it's just a white people thing, but this idea of going out in a big group and then you let one person gets in and the other people have to go somewhere else is fucking odd. Your friends, if you're out with your friends, you all get in. If you don't all get in, you all go somewhere else. No big deal. The speak German thing. Only thing I know how to say in German is Entschuldigung. The only thing I know how to say in German is fucking Entschuldigung. And I get in all the time. So this German thing is obviously bullshit. Who's playing on the night? Of course, that's standard. Why would you go out somewhere and not know who's playing? Why would you go to a fucking nightclub and not have an idea of someone who's playing? All you have to do is go on the fucking website, go on the program, whatever day you're going, click on it, see who the list of lineup is, and just copy and paste. That's all you have to do. Just do this. Go like that. Search on Google. Oh, look at the links that come up. This guy's called Ben Sims. All right, cool. Artist, he's techno, da, da, da. And just click on one of the links and listen through and see if you like what you hear. If you like what you hear, you go to the fucking, you know, event and you have a good time. You skip around. It's not that hard to figure out who's playing and what they're doing. Really isn't that difficult to me, in my fucking opinion. So you have to do that. And the wear black thing, I say don't do this because everyone does this. Because everyone does this, stick out a bit and wear what you usually would wear, or just wear fucking bright colors and see how that goes. Because I wear whatever I want to wear. I'll wear bright colors, I'll wear dark colors, whatever. I do what I want. The last couple of times I went there, I've worn all white, Jamie, which is the opposite of wearing all black. And I've gotten in pretty fine. So forget all that shit. Continuing. Other suggestions include looking bored as possible, having a shaved head. What the fuck? They're like, having a shaved head, being a Nazi, and having a copy of Mein Kampf in your back pocket. All these things will increase. Like, what? Anyway, other suggestions include looking bored as possible, having a shaved head, and never ever smiling. That's also dumb. I'm smiling, I'm having a good time, I'm talking, I'm being myself in there. If you look like a tourist, obviously I'm a tourist. There's not many black people in fucking Berlin. And the black people that are in Berlin don't go to fucking Berghain. Or at least the ones that look like me. You know what I mean? They don't go there. If you look like you're trying too hard, it's a no. If you look like you aren't trying hard enough, it's a no. But as long as you're relaxed, it's fine. So it's not that big. Honestly, like, people just over egg it. Is it a great club? Yes. Is the door policy annoying? Yes. Is it almost discriminatory? Yes. Is it going to piss you off if you don't get in? Yes. Does the door policy help the atmosphere inside? Of course. Because they're so strict with the door policy, when you do get in there, people on their best behavior to get in. When they get in, they're fucking relieved. So they fucking go crazy and have a good time. People are dancing. They cover your phone camera, so you're probably not using it as much as you would do if you had your camera on. And just in general, phone use in there is not really a thing. You don't really see many people on their phone. It's kind of frowned upon. So the atmosphere in there is great. It's worth the wait. But it's not the end of the world. If you don't get in, there's plenty of clubs in Berlin, sorry, to go to. RSO is one that kind of springs to mind, to go to and have a good time. You know, Oxy, loads of fucking clubs over there that you can have a good time at. Like, it's not the be-all and end-all. Trezor is there. Like, come on, bro. Like, all this stuff just for a nightclub. If you don't get in, go somewhere else. At the front of the queue is a metal barrier. Hopefuls are then invited in small groups to approach the gatekeepers. A group wearing jean shorts and football tops are quickly hit with bouncer's signature phrase, "Not tonight." Again, no problem. One guy who looks like he's part, and is in his mid-20s, his most desirable age bracket, apparently is greeted with "Hi," to which he responds to in kind and is told to leave. As the successful candidate slops away, the security mumble something among themselves, all burst out laughing. Some suspected door staff simply reject people for their own amusement. That could happen too, but it just is what it is. Like, you could increase your chances if you don't go when it's super busy, like maybe Sunday mornings and shit. That can kind of help. Some people like going when the bouncers change their shifts. You can find that out through, like, you know, the subreddit and the Berghain Live, I think, Instagram page. All those things can kind of help. But again, it's just luck, man. Just try your luck. If you get in, you get in. If you don't, you don't. Now it's my turn. I let my German friend do the talking, and it turns out she and the man sussing us out are from the same city. We all walk through without further. There's Sven. There's a main bouncer who's lovely, by the way. He's got this menacing look, and he's kind of used as the poster child of meanness, but he's actually one of the nicest guys that you'll meet out there in Berlin in terms of bouncers. There's some of them that are real cunts that will actually, you know, make you feel like a peon, but he's actually nice. I'm not going to lie. Inside the club, my body is searched for sharp objects. Small green circular circles are placed above my phone camera. There are no photos in Berghain. The entry fee is €35, £30, and I'm given a date orange wristband with a club's logo and a stencil of the sheet printed on it several times. I wonder where they're trying to say. Yeah, man. I remember the times where Berghain was like €20 or something to get in. It's kind of more expensive now, but it's still incredibly cheap compared to London. I think Fold prices are basically the same. And that's one of our best clubs here. So, you know, there's some clubs in London. I think Drumsheds have tickets for like £50, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Drumsheds have definitely tickets for £50. Let's see here. Drumsheds, let's do Drumsheds RA. I'm sure Drumsheds have events on happening that are like £50, maybe £100. So, you know, shitty venue and it's got these horrible tickets. So imagine going to one of the best clubs in the world and it's only £30, minor. So this event on the 27th of April is, yeah, look at that. Look at the fucking prices of that shit. To party from 12 in the afternoon to 10:30 at night. Who's waking up at fucking 10 a.m. to go rave? Go fuck yourself. General admission, fourth release, £47.50 plus £5.70 booking fee. That's over £50 to go to one of the most soulless venues in the world in Drumsheds. 10,000 capacity and just like, you know, a former fucking IKEA, you know, building that's now been turned into a club. Yeah. No, thank you. Continues. Entering the next room, I'm met by dozens of people stripping off. It turns out the backpacks are stuffed with alternative outfits, like me. People have queue attire, Berghain attire, and without fail, the latter means less clothing. A popular choice is to wear something on your bottom half and nothing more. Each person... That's actually a good point. The first time I went, I think that was something that captivated me, to be honest. Like, seeing that amount of ripped dudes. I don't think I've ever seen that. I think it probably must be normal in most gay clubs, but I think in Berghain that the prevalence, the amount of like buff, like when I mean buff, I mean like bodybuilding buff guys just walking around topless, like glistening from all the sweat, is wild. They're massive and they usually don't say excuse me. They let their shoulders do the talking. Each person who checks their bag and coat, £250, is given a black necklace with a metal pendant engraved with a number hanging on it. It feels like a little cult-like. By the way, it's a little... The cloakroom is fucking amazing. The cloakroom people that work there are fucking fantastic. They're fucking ninjas. They're fucking really good at their job. But word of warning, if you ever go to Berghain and you get given that necklace, the rope necklace with a little hang tag on it, don't put a necklace around your neck. I put one around my neck once and I had the worst rash ever, which makes sense because, you know, God knows what somebody's done with that fucking rope. Do you know what I mean? That's gone up someone's asshole, it's gone around someone's dick, it's gone in someone's pussy, it's gone in somebody's fucking armpit, in between their fucking, you know, behind their knees. That rope has been through some shit. But one time I went and I fucking put my, you know, I put it on my neck like a necklace, and the next day, you know, my neck was looking like I had fucking chicken pox all over it. The bumps are fucking wild. So don't do that. Just put it in your pocket. Anyway, continues. Inside the club consists of two parts. Panorama Bar opens first, by the way, a warm-up of Berghain. The main event, the dark room smoke-filled, is lit with red strobes. Techno Berliner Signature is blasting through one of the club's famously high-quality sound systems, and everyone is having a good boogie. Yeah, that's something I love about the main room. The Berghain main room is amazing for that because it's so loud, but you can talk to your friend or you can talk to somebody without having to scream or do the club thing and kind of go close to their ear. You can actually have a conversation. You shouldn't do anywhere on a dance floor, but that's how finely tuned the system is. It's really loud, but it's also good enough where you can kind of hear the person next to you. So it's fucking brilliant. It's 5 in the morning in the blink of an eye, but things are just only getting started. Berghain is renowned for its stamina. This weekend, the club opened on Friday night and stays open until the clock strikes 12 on Tuesday. I think this person went during a Sylvester. That might be why they paid that much price. I think this was a Sylvester person. I think so. Which is their special kind of like, you know, public holiday event type of thing. If you don't get in, Berlin has over 140 clubs. Happy to cater to your needs. How many clubs are there in London? How many nightclubs are in London? Let's see. There's 140 in Berlin officially. How many are in London? Really? That's a lie. There's 198 venues. Come on. I don't know if that's true. I don't believe that. I think they are grouping together bars and stuff because I don't feel like we have 198 venues. No way. No fucking way we have 198 venues. But if we do, fair enough. Let's continue. If you don't get in, Berlin has 140 other venues. Happy to cater to your needs. That's one of the reasons why there are 12.1 million people who visit the city last year. Berlin's vibrant clubbing culture is one of the city's biggest draws, with it highlighted when Berlin techno scene gained a UNESCO cultural heritage status in March and a nod to its cultural contribution to the city. I've only realized this in recent years. That's why I stopped really comparing the cities, Berlin and London, and stopped ranting on here about how London needs to do things differently like Berlin. We can't do that. Berlin's just a different place. Berlin's not even there's no other city like Berlin, even in fucking Germany, let alone the rest of Europe. So the way they do things over there, the way they fucking promote and highlight and support nightlife, it's just never going to run in the UK, ever. Especially in London, it won't run. We don't even have clubs that are open past 6 a.m., for goodness sake. Do you know what I mean? Most of our clubs close at 4 a.m. Most of the clubs really, in general, close at about 2. Huge areas of London are kind of blacklisted for having clubs, like parts of Shoreditch and Dawson and Hackney have no real, you know, it's a mess. But over there, you know, Berlin's fucking nightlife scene, and Berghain specifically, has become a cultural, it has cultural heritage status. Imagine that. That basically means the building's protected. There's never going to be like a co-working space built on that ground. It's not going to get knocked down and turned into fucking WeWork. Do you know what I mean? That's a fucking brilliant thing. It continues. Berlin Club Commission said it is another milestone for the city's techno producers, artists, club operators and event goers. The latest announcement followed the German Federal Parliament's decision to make Berlin Club's culture institutions, in 2021. They were previously considered entertainment venues thrown in with brothels and casinos, but now the same legal status as museums and opera houses. Imagine if ever in the UK we could have clubs regarded on the same level as museums and like... We just want clubs to be like fucking restaurants. We have more restaurants in London than people that have mouths. If we could have clubs be the same status as restaurants, we'd be onto something. These two moves that the club are entitled to, tax bracket, planning protection, subsidies and other funding to protect it. The measures have helped to protect the health of Berlin's nightlife in a tough environment that is seeing late night venues close in droves in London and across Europe. Indeed, the latest data from Nighttime Association revealed that 3,000 businesses have shut down in London. Berlin's nightlife doesn't appear to have suffered in the same way, recognizing the importance of these spaces as key, it seems. That's partly true. Some venues have closed though. It's not like it's like all sunshine and rainbow over there. There have been some venues that have closed, unfortunately, due to neighbor complaints and stuff. It does happen over there. Gentrification does affect them, but just not as much as it would do in London at all. Because, you know, if Berghain existed in London, it would have got turned into a fucking village, into something already. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have existed at all. Like Printworks even couldn't survive. Do you know what I mean? The Burgang wouldn't survive. Sadly, despite my best efforts, I didn't have the energy to stay until Burgang's section of the Burgang opened. So the next day I rallied and headed back to the club. By 6 p.m. on Sunday, I'm joining the re-entry line. Burgang has a policy of allowing you back in for €5 if you previously entered at one point over the given weekend. It allows partygoers to rest up, do their laundry, feed their cats, and then carry on partying. Exactly. London could learn from that. We don't have any re-entry policy. I don't think there's a single club in London that allows re-entry. I don't think so. Even the old... No, actually, I take that back. I think Hotbox does. Hotbox, big up fucking... Oh, why is the fucking name fucking escaped me? Big up Becky Strook. Big up Hotbox and Becky Strook. I think that might be the only party in London that allows re-entry. Most nights don't allow re-entry. Once you're in, you're in. You're kidnapped. You're a hostage. This time, and also it doesn't affect you because then you just get fucked up. You know what I mean? There's no time to rest, no time, whatever, but whatever, who knows. This time I walk through without exchanging a word. I get into Burkine at around 9 p.m. tonight, and the outfits are more extreme. The gangs of men with shaved heads wearing bondage gear, gimp masks, march towards the main part of the club. The high ceilings, the enormous scale of the club are impressive. It's hard not to feel giddy. This is a wraparound steel balcony that overlooks the main dance floor. From it, you can see hundreds of people dancing in trance-like state. And the thumpy electronic music is incredibly hot and busy, but there's such an excessive in the air, and your thrill is so lively. The best place for me to people watch is the stairs leading up to Panorama Bar, next to where the guy that does the VJs and shit, and you just overlook the main floor of Burkine. That's the best place for me to people watch, because you see all the lights kind of like flickering, and you see people like moving. It's all like stop motion. It's fucking awesome. Several hours later, I leave the club quite spellbound. Burkine exceeded all my expectations. It absolutely lives up to reputation. Moving around that building while listening to that music among revelers who are all absolutely committed tonight gives a place an energy and have not experienced anywhere else. Maybe the bouncers are onto something. That's the thing. That's the annoying thing about Burkine. When you get in, even after you've been rejected many times and you complain about it, you bitch about it, and you write snarky tweets about it in captions, and you promise yourself you're never going to go back. When you get in once, you understand why they do what they do. It's very, again, discriminatory. It's very kind of rude, right? Them not letting everybody in. But when you do get in, you understand that care they put into who comes in, who doesn't come in, the kind of, you know, the ambiance around it, the attitude around it, all of that stuff, it kind of adds to the actual night. Because when people do get in, they're on their best behavior. And like, I've never seen any trouble in that place ever. I've never seen somebody argue. The most I've seen is people get too fucked up on like G or something. But I've never seen anybody do anything that you'd see in regular pubs, bars, and fucking supermarkets. But you never see it there. The truth is that there's no secret sauce of making the past the bouncers. It's all a roll of the dice. Exactly. Regulars say the more you go, the more likely it is that you let in. Exactly. That's very true. If you went there every weekend, you'll be fine. Or if you went there every month, you'll be fine. Or every other month, you'll be fine. It just isn't that big of a deal. And also, maybe it's important to support your local scene. Go out to your local scene. Get used to that as well. Maybe that, you know, being around your local scene will give you some sort of like fragrance that you could use to go in there. You know what I mean? Because usually you can spot fucking normies and people that don't belong there from a mile away anyway. So maybe go to a couple sex clubs and sex parties and gay clubs in your scene, in your city, and then see how you vibe with that, and then go to the big place. You know what I mean? Don't fucking aim for the stars when you could land on the moon. Or do what Brenda says. Don't aim for the moon when you can land on the stars. Anyway, I think the bouncers are largely asking themselves if you look like you're meant to be there. Will you contribute to the right overall energy? The point is, give Burkine a go. Follow the tips. Enjoy the process. In the worst case scenario, you'll have an anecdote. And if things don't go to plan, you'll have the time of your life, a win-win. Exactly. Go anyway. It's a good city. It's a cool city to hang out in. If you don't mind graffiti and shit on the floor, and, you know, homeless people chasing you down the fucking river and shit, and, you know, loads of white people with dreads. If you don't mind that, it's a great city. But Burkine isn't the only thing about it. They've got a great food scene there, great museums, great parks, you know, great sightseeing. It's a cool city in it. So if you don't get in, just do everything else. And obviously, here's the kind of, what you call it, tips, a cheat sheet. Don't be too drunk in a queue, wear black or wear something very vibrant. I like that, vibrant. Speak German. I don't do that. It's being small groups. That's dumb. Don't abandon your friends. If you don't get in, if one doesn't get in, you should all leave. I think so. Know which DJs are scheduled to play. That's normal. Don't look bored. This is stupid also. Unnecessary. Just pretentious nonsense. Shave your head. Also not doing. Don't smile. also not doing. Don't look like a Taurus. I am, because clearly, you know, don't try too hard. I'm always trying too hard. That's my MO. I'm black. I can't afford to just go through the motions. That's not what we do. Do you know what I mean? We have to always do things 10 times better than people because, you know, we're black. Look a bit tough. I'm not tough. I can't do that. Be in your mid-20s. I'm actually 18. And be relaxed. Cool. I'm always relaxed. So big up the writer. Amazing fucking article. Great. Nice to see. But unfortunately, for all of us irregulars who go there, or for all of us fiends, this will probably mean more tourists. Telegraph is a very big newspaper here. I'm sure it's a big newspaper everywhere. And this has been shared everywhere. So don't expect, you know, don't be surprised if you see more people that you probably have never seen in a club, or different types of people who have read this from this. So, you know, good article, but, you know, damn it. Anyways, that is it, my friends. That is the Agostino Zynga Show, episode number 696. Thank you for tuning in. It's been a pleasure to have your company, always, as per usual. Much love. Muchas gracias. If it's your first time checking out the show, make sure you smash the like button down below if you're watching it. If you're listening to the podcast, please leave me a 5-star review on the platforms that you listen this to. Apple, Spotify, all that shit. That's greatly appreciated. For those of you watching the live stream, in about 10 minutes, I'm going to do random show. In about 10 minutes, I'm going to do a random show, so stick around for that one. But for those of you listening to the podcast only and watching the podcast only, I'm tuning out. I'm leaving you. Thank you for hanging out with me. It's been a fucking blast. I've loved every absolute minute of it, and I can't wait to do it once again. And again, if you need details regarding myself and whatever, please, you know, check out the fucking link below. That'd be greatly appreciated. We are going to leave you, or my tune today is going to be from the one and only Renee Wise. I'm sure most of you know who Renee Wise is. I'm a fucking big fan of his, part of the Renee Wise fucking fan club. Amazing DJ, phenomenal fucking producer, and he just released one of his first records on his label called Moving Pressure. The tune is called Escaping Syro. I don't know if you pronounce it. Is it Syro or Syro? Either way, it's a fucking amazing song. Just dropped the other day. Check it out. Available on his label, Moving Pressure, Renee Wise, Escaping Syro. This is me signing out. Thank you for tuning in, my friends. Peace.